Hi, everyone. This is an incredibly great setup of presentations, and I'm really happy that we all have kind of results to present. So I'm going to kind of go through a couple of my earlier slides quickly and get to some of our results. This is the timeline for New York City. As they've mentioned, New York City was the first to introduce calorie labeling regulations. So you can see it was first introduced in December of 06, and after a series of lawsuits, it took effect in March of 08. And fines started being issued in July of 08. So we used July of 08 as the kind of effective date when everybody had it. But by that time, a couple of chains, notably Starbucks and Subway, already had partial postings up. So you'll see that in some of our data. So in New York City, it's a regulation in the health code. It requires the chains with 15 or more locations post calorie information, clear and proximate and conspicuous. These are the effective dates. It includes both fast food and sit down, but we're going to just talk about fast food today. We all know what the public health rationale is, so we can move on from that. Why fast food chains? It's a huge potential impact. They account for over a third of all restaurant traffic in New York City, so they're only about 10% of restaurants in New York City, but they're a third of customers, and one in four Americans report eating fast food. It's also feasible for reasons we know, standardized menus, and because of the standardization, we can get the counts. We're not picking on fast food restaurants. So our study objectives were to assess the impact of this first introduction of calorie labeling. The outcome measures were to see change in mean calories, change in percentages of customers who see and use calorie information, and see and use are the last two bullets there. So it's consistent with the other studies, which is really fantastic, so we can compare across localities the way that Jim showed us in his first presentation. What we did was a serial cross-sectional survey of customers exiting fast food restaurants in spring 07 and spring 09, similar to the other studies that you've heard about. We took a random sample of all stores of the top 13 fast food and coffee chains. The total was 275 stores, which covered about 2,500 of the regulated locations, so of regulated store locations. We designed it to be a population-based sample of weekday lunchtime fast food customers and weekday afternoon coffee chain customers. This gives you an idea of just the distribution of the chains in New York City. You're not meant to be able to read the bottom, but like the first bar is Dunkin' Donuts. So there's almost 350 Dunkin' Donuts in New York City. The second one is Subway. The third is McDonald's. So McDonald's, there's like 250 McDonald's. So these chains ended up being proportional in our sample to the way they're distributed here. We stopped at 13 because by the time you get to 13, you get to about 90% of the covered locations. We collected receipts at the lunchtime chains between 12 and 2, and in the coffee chains between 2 and 4 in the afternoon, and the goal was 2 hours or 55 receipts. New York City is a very busy place, so sometimes they got 55 receipts in 45 minutes. Other times they can stand there for 2 hours and get 5 receipts, because we forgot about the far out boroughs of New York. So we gave them a $2 Metro card. With the data from the receipts, just like everyone else has done, was matched to nutrition data from each of the chains based on what was on their websites, and we aggregated that to get a total calories per customer. We adjusted it for the clustering of people within locations, all of our data here. So this gives you an idea of the 275 locations in the full sample. It's broken down by burger, sandwich, chicken, pizza, Taco Bell, and the two coffee chains. You can see that in the spring 07 and spring 09, the distribution of the number of customers is about the same, which is nice to see. You can also quickly see that we didn't get a lot of responses from the pizza places. So Domino's, we had 44 customers in 10 locations compared to 434 at 11 Wendy's. So there's a big difference there. And you'll see that coming up in our data. So now we're going to just talk about the lunch chains. So although overall we had 11,000 receipts in 07 and 12,000 in spring 09, half of those, because of that distribution I just showed you, are actually the coffee chains. So it's 7,000 lunchtime chains in spring 07 and 8,000 in spring 09. So change in mean calories, this gives you the same kind of thing that you just saw by each of the chains. So the burger chains, you can see slight changes. each one of those, the differences in each one of those, if you take those, although they look very small here, if you take those differences and then just graph those, you get this. So you see a statistically significant reduction in mean calories at three of the chains. We grouped the pizza places together here just because there's this big mess in there that we can talk about. And you see a significant reduction at Au Bon Pain and KFC. You see a significant increase at Subway, and everybody knows what that's about? $5 foot long. There you go. Marketing does work, and it does affect your study design in weird ways. This just gives you regression-adjusted mean calories in spring 07 and spring 09, just a crude estimate, just putting everything in, not adjusting for anything. The second adjusts for gender and the poverty rate of the zip code. The model 2 further adjusts for number of food items, beverage, and cost. And you can see across each one of those, it's plus or minus 20 calories. So although that minus 20 calories is statistically significant, that's just because we have kind of a big sample size. It's not incredibly interesting. So this is what you're seeing from everyone across all the studies, and it's an interesting thing to talk about what that might mean. The second question is change in percentage of customers who report seeing and using calorie information. What's nice about this is that our results are consistent with everybody else's results. It's always a good thing to see when you're doing studies like this. So in 07 to 09, we have from 11% to 56% of people saying they see calorie information, and about overall, the darker bar in the bottom, about a quarter of people say they use calorie information, and that translates to about 15% of the full sample. This is differences in mean calories between people who say they used calorie information compared to everyone else. This is spring 09 only. Once calories were posted, people who said they used calorie information actually purchased fewer calories. So it's nice to see this kind of result. Shouldn't be startling. It's interesting, in Taco Bell, they decided to purchase more calories, people who said they used calories. But these things happen with data. At the burger places and at Subway, it's consistent and it's significant. This is the same thing, kind of goes through it. Then this is just comparing people who used calorie information to those who didn't. So the crude estimates are 106 calorie difference. So they purchased 106 fewer calories than people who didn't use calorie information. And adjusting it doesn't do a lot to it. So you still get a 78 calorie difference in the full model. And the next question is, what food choices are they making when they say that they're using calorie information? This is the sampling of people in awareness and use. So there's three categories: didn't see calorie information, saw it but didn't use it, in the middle, and used calorie information. And this just gives you column percentages. So you can see quickly here that younger people were less likely to use calorie information. Women are more likely to use calorie information. This just gives you a column percent for a meal and snack and drink only. And then residential income of the person that we were talking to. This does the same thing, but just does the kind of a row percent. So in the far right is the orange, the used calorie information. So that's that 15% broken out by gender, by age, by the meal snack, and by the income. So you can see a little bit of differences, not a lot, but a little bit. The meal snack is interesting to us, and I'm not sure if it's the next slide, but meals only, yeah. So this is looking at meals only, and those three categories: didn't see, saw but didn't use, and saw and used calorie information. So you can see this is the distribution by gender. Women do purchase fewer calories. This is by age. Younger people buy more calories. The same pattern across everyone. And this is by income. Similar patterns. What's interesting here is that there's not a lot of difference between income categories. This is differences in purchases at the burger chains. So people at burger chains who used calorie information were less likely to buy burgers, were more likely to buy salads, were less likely to buy fries, were more likely to buy diet sodas. At chicken chains, at KFC, the grilled chicken actually worked again. So $5 footlongs work, grilled chicken works. So less likely to buy fries, and also the diet soda is here too, evident. And then at Subway, the same proportion of people bought the 12 and 6 inch, but they're more likely to buy the ones that are marketed as low fat, people who say they use calorie information, and they're also more likely to buy the diet soda. So that summarizes that we saw no significant reduction, but there was a lot of variation by chain, which I think is really important. So the three chains, which together account for 40% of all purchases, did show significant reduction from pre to post. About 1 in 6 people, consistent with the other studies, report using calorie information, and they use it to make lower calorie choices, which is good to see. So I think that the idea of looking at how chains might be modifying their menus in response to these requirements is an important thing to look at. These are strengths and limitations, but don't need to dwell on that. And these are just a couple of examples of things. So 650 calories at Burger King. This is the grilled chicken at Kentucky Fried Chicken, kind of California. And this is the project team. Many thanks to all of these people, and especially to the huge amount of data collectors that went out to 275 locations. We were very lucky to have a lot of the same data collectors for the two time periods, which I think also helped us a lot. That's it.